And we are live.
Now, I suppose you all know how ordinary television works. You photograph something.
Sure, I do. You photograph something, then the photograph is split up into millions of tiny pieces, and they go whizzing through the air down to your TV set where they're all put together again in the right order.
You should open your mouth a little wider when you speak.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Love to watch TV, Mike?
You bet.
You like the killings, huh?
What do you think life's all about?
Insert music here.
Oh, you've lost 900 baseball games, and we kids all love to call you names. And you never learned to fly a kite, and your family so you cannot ride. And at lunch you sit alone and mope. You're a wishy-washy kind of dope. Charlie Brown, Charlie Brown, you don't have one hope.
This is Mike TV, episode 6. Follow us on Twitter at MikeTV1. Today we will be discussing Legion, Season 3, Episode 2, also called Chapter 21. My name is Lisa, and joining me is my co-host, Dean. Hello, Dean.
Hey, Lisa. How you doing tonight?
Wonderful, wonderful. Excited to be discussing Legion with you. This episode was a lot of fun.
Absolutely, definitely. Season premiere part two, for the most part, is a nice continuation right off of last week's premiere.
Yes, it felt like we were moving chess pieces into place.
Yeah, you know what I liked about it was that it was definitely a continuation of the last episode. It's still a very setup episode, but it still feels way faster already, or at least that it's about to be faster than last season, which was the big complaint for most people for season two, is that the story of finding Farouk's body just ended up being too drawn out. This already seems like they're setting it up, and then hopefully, you know, pending maybe one or two one-off episodes, which I think they only have room for like one, they're just going to start going to finish this up. So I'm hoping that's what's going to happen.
And actually, if you stayed and watched the trailer for next week, let's talk about it now, because it looks like it could be a bottle episode next week, where we go into David's origin story and his real parents, which, spoiler alert, Professor Xavier is his father. And so it looks like that could be a self-contained episode next week. So it makes me wonder, with so few episodes this season, are we even going to see Melanie and Oliver?
You know, I kind of did think about that, and I almost wonder, it wouldn't completely surprise me, because I don't feel like they have much to offer to the main plot, you know, based on where we left them in the Ice Cube. Well, you know, we saw them, it was 3 years ahead anyway.
Right.
But based on where we left them, I don't know if they have much to offer. It wouldn't surprise me if we see them. I wouldn't be surprised if they were the bookend to the entire season, almost another epilogue, kind of like how they were at the end of season two. If we just only saw them maybe once, maybe twice throughout this, it wouldn't surprise me at all. They're kind of not necessary anymore to the plot.
Do you think that somehow Farouk and his manipulation of them last season destroyed them to a point where they could not return? Because it does seem odd that they're not helping Division 3, that they're not part of that crew.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, because when we saw in the Ice Cube, it was a combination of them seeming almost defeated, but also that fogginess and discombobulation from being in the astral plane too long had already taken a hold of them. So we don't really know for sure if they went there immediately. We don't know if they went there, if they're out there somewhere right now and they haven't gone there yet. So hopefully they'll visit them at some point. But if they just visited them to show why they went there and then showed them later, Melanie, she kind of, you know, I think she lost her appeal last season. Obviously, I want to see as much as Jermaine Clement as I can. Mm-hmm. But if I only see him a couple times a season in trade-off for other characters, I won't be too angry about it.
It seems like maybe Farouk has done something to squirrel them away, not to have a play on words there, because we're going to talk about squirrel. But they're not even part of the conversation amongst their former teammates, especially Melanie. I can understand if they're not saying, you know, why isn't Oliver here, but wouldn't the discussion of Melanie, because this is supposedly taking place very shortly after the battle in Les Désolés. So Sid had just come from the depths, you know, from with Melanie. Wouldn't she be saying, why isn't Melanie here helping us? It just seems like a little bit of a plot hole. I don't want to complain about the show. I love it so much, but
you know, Sid's on me first, so she ain't thinking about anybody else. It's all her and revenge on David. But also, she was the last person to see her even semi-conscious. Everyone else just thinks of her as the, you know, the vaping old chick in the apartment who's been drugged out for the last 8 months complaining about her husband leaving her, you know, for Farouk. So it wouldn't surprise me if everyone else kind of was just like, oh, whatever, she's gone.
Well, all right. I don't want to harp too much on, I love those characters. And so I am missing them this season. I hope we do get more of them than just an epilogue an epilogue, at least I'll take it.
You know, I love Oliver, but also, you know, from even our series preview, Melanie left a bad taste in my mouth, which even though it wasn't her fault, cause she was under Farouk's power, She was the person that tore Sid and David apart. So I still am a little bitter toward that. I could, if I didn't see her anymore, not a biggie.
All right. Well, let's get into it. Before we start discussing the show, I do want to make an announcement. Dean and I have talked, and I'm excited to announce that when Preacher returns on AMC for its, fourth and final season, in August, I believe August 3rd, I'm going to check that date and get back to you, but we will cover Preacher as well. So we're going to talk about, we'll talk offline about how that's going to look for future episodes, but I'm so excited, Dean, to have you continue this discussion on these two awesome comic book shows with me. My favorite genre of television is comic books.
Absolutely. We're going to be done playing chess with David and the Shadow King. We're going to be playing some fucking checkers with, you know, Jesse and the gang. So we're ready to go.
So get excited for that, Radio Labyrinth listeners. Tell your friends. All right. Let's get into Legion Season 3, Episode 2, also called Chapter 21. One of my favorite things about Legion, I don't know if we've talked about it before, is when they come on and recap what happened previously. They never just straightforwardly say previously on Legion. Sometimes they've kind of done this since season one. Sometimes they just mix up the words and say, you know, Legion on previously. Mm-hmm. And this one we've heard before. This one's my favorite. This time, last season we heard John Hamm say it. This time it was David's voice saying it. And it is ostensibly on Legion. And I actually looked up the definition of ostensibly, and it means, and I love, this is just perfect. It means apparently or purportedly, but perhaps not actually.
Yeah, in fact, I was even going to say, I think the first time I noticed that was last season when John Hamm, he said apparently last week on Lead. So I love that, like, that's their kind of catchphrase, apparently, you know, and it's all based on this perception versus reality. You know, I for a few of you maybe who were following me on from the Radio Shack, from the Radio Labyrinth Radio Shack, you know, I live tweet the episodes. I actually tweeted the Legion Twitter and at one point during the beginning of the show and said something about David making his perception a reality, and they even said, oh, but what if the reality is just your perception, you know? And so it is this, they kind of, they're very precise when they tweet back. They kind of give little hints if you interact with their Twitter. So it is this idea, and the Shadow King during this episode at some point talks about a false reality and David's, what he thinks is real versus what actually is going on. So I love that the concept of the false narrator, you know, that's always been a thing about Legion. David is not reliable for seeing it through David's eyes for the most part.
Absolutely. So the show opens, David is in his yoga pose. You know, that's when he is, thinking or inserting himself into other minds or reading minds. This time he seems to be reminiscing and thinking about Sid, and this great Charlie Brown song is playing.
What do you think about the Charlie Brown song? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, on my second watch, Both times watching the show, I had the closed captions on. Second watch, I really paid attention to the lyrics of the song. And I don't want to jump ahead too much because we'll get there.
Right.
First of all, I love Noah Hawley's musical choices. I think Noah Hawley and I are kindred spirits. A lot of songs he selects are obscure, but they are all, so many of the songs are songs I know and songs that are in my library.
Some of his covers are amazing. Like the covers he chooses for some of these songs are so good.
Right. Like the Fly Like an Eagle cover.
Yep.
That was him last week. I didn't even realize that until I was looking for the sound clips to put with the show, but the Charlie Brown song was definitely about Charlie Brown getting the girl, right?
Well, it's everyone thinking he can't get the girl, right? They're all trying to tell him, you're a blockhead, you're a loser, Charlie Brown. No, but I know this girl. As soon as I talk to her, it's hope out of desperation, I feel like.
Yeah, it was an interesting choice. And what I was going to say is the scene later on, the black and white scene with Farouk on the piano, he's playing that Christmas song, but that is the Christmas song from Charlie Brown.
Oh, also. Yes.
So I thought that was a really neat tie-in. I couldn't figure out any other reason for that song other than just to make you think about Charlie Brown again.
When we get there, bring it up. I love that.
Good. So then we go from that scene to the opening credits, and one of my favorite songs of all time, I'm not kidding, I'm going to insert that song probably at the beginning of this episode, is playing, it's by The Secret Machines. It's called First Wave Intact. Yep. It's a freaking amazing song. We don't get much of it, but I was just jumping up and down. Noah Hawley likes The Secret Machines. So do I. That must mean something. So we're seeing the camera pan through this, the same smoky, trippy room in David's mind house. And we get more lessons in time travel. This time, just like we discussed, that you so aptly deduced about the tooth, this time Switch is learning about consequences.
I believe
the tooth, her losing the tooth, is a consequence.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, as soon as that came up, I almost lit up because, that was one of the last things we talked about
last
episode. And so I was like, yes, it's consequences. It's almost reading my mind. David's reading my mind while I'm watching this show because that was the next thing. I love how it jumps from, I think the last one we were on last episode for the lessons in time travel was chapter maybe 14 or 15. And it jumps to chapter 20 now. It did this a couple times last season with John Hamm's interstitials. It would jump maybe a couple chapters every now and then. So we don't really know the full rules of time travel. In fact, we only started at like chapter 12 or 13. So we don't even know the first 10 to 11, the Bill of Rights versions of the rules of time travel. We don't even know that. So I love that it kind of is jumping around, hitting the high points and low points. We didn't mention that you were so excited last week about the opening credits of the show coming at the very end of the episode.
Right.
I like, we both said this a little bit ago, and we talked about this before we started recording. This was definitely a part two of the premiere, and I love how they put the credits right at the beginning. And it was the same font. Did you notice
that? It was. That yellow submarine font. That was such a perfect name.
It was telling you that it was like we're still setting it up. And I love the little plane flying through, the toy plane, the practical effects. Again, Noah Hawley always will go for practical effects when he can. I loved it. So I love that this almost just set up the fact that we're still setting the story up. And so it's all just starting right off the bat. During that song, the craziness is going on in the drug house. What was Switch doing?
Still listening to her headphones, still sitting on her knees meditating.
Zen, total zen. She is still not part of this drug trip. We talked about she didn't drink the tea last week. She's still not smoking the pig tits this week. She's there, studying. She's there for, I don't know what the reason she's there for, but she's there for what she thinks is a purpose and a noble purpose to help David. And I love that. I love that about her. There's just chaos going on around her, and she's just total zen. I loved it.
I did too. And so the consequences we hear, some of them, I took some notes, deliberate your plan very carefully. What lives you intersect with either casually or deliberately. not all temporal interactions go as planned. So interesting there. Warning, I think, again, more foreshadowing.
Absolutely.
And then we see really the first signs of Lenny's jealousy as she barges into the room to wake everybody up. They're all sleeping in these giant nests, except for Switch, who is on her knees just meditating. Lenny just kind of kicks everybody out of the room and tells Switch, you know, David wants to see her. But just like you called it, her jealousy is already rearing its ugly head. She leans in close to Switch. Well, first she rips off the headphones and we get confirmation that that she's listening to.
I love that because it almost seemed like it was a joke that that the show was playing on people in general. Because it definitely sounded, I mean, I'm not an expert, but it sounded more Japanese to me, like in the language in the first show.
I agree.
There was even a line in the song from the first show, that Something for Your Mind, where she's like, I'm straight from Japan or something like that, to kind of make it seem like that. But I love that even Lenny, what is this, Japanese? Chinese, whatever. And she just throws, you know, it is that kind of sense of, it really doesn't matter, but it was kind of like just a joke of people assuming it was Japanese. I thought that was hilarious.
And she uses a Japanese word when she leans in close to Switch. She says, I'm David's major domo. That's Japanese.
Yep.
She says, this girl, not you. And then I love the line. She goes, you might have your adorable fashion sense and superpowers, but you work for me and I work for him. And that is the order. So straight up, she is definitely asserting her would-be power, which really she doesn't have any, but.
Right. And she even says, I think twice, he needs me. He needs me. But in reality, I think she knows that, well, technically he needs Switch more right now than you. But yeah, I mean, she's so bitter. And as we keep going, we'll see a couple more things of how it's just, she's so obviously jealous.
Yes. So she takes Switch to David. We hear David arguing with himself, his inner thoughts. He's talking. He's about the bad David, the Scottish David, I think is what we're hearing, is talking about the blonde thing who pretends to love us. So that was interesting. Clearly, you know, they're arguing about Sid, or David's arguing with himself about Sid. Lenny arrives with Switch, and then I loved this. You know, it was clear Lenny wanted to stay and see what the hell is happening. And David dismisses her, and as soon as she shows any sign of being annoyed by that, he mind tricks her into thinking that she's hungry and that she's happy, that she's walking away happily getting something to eat, which then she does.
Even then, it almost seemed like she knew what he was doing. Like, the way the Aubrey Plaza delivers that line of, oh, I'm going to go back in, I'm going to get something to eat. She almost does it, like, begrudgingly. Like, she knows that he just mind-tricked her, but she's, like, it's almost like he didn't necessarily mind-trick her. He just suggested it, and she was like, okay, fine. And, like, fine, I'm going in, I'm going to get something to eat. Like, she just she plays it so, she's just dripping with jealousy, the green rage monster of jealousy. I love it. Aubrey Plaza plays it so perfectly.
I agree. I'm not sure if she knows that David's manipulating her. I thought this was a definite sign of David's power.
No, for sure. I do think he just completely manipulated her. But like I said, it's almost the way she just presented it. It just seemed like, you know, she didn't immediately just like, hey, I'm going in to eat. Like, she just, there was like a pause, and it was, I'm going inside. She just seemed like she was fighting it almost.
And why do you think he doesn't want her to be involved in it? If she is his lieutenant or his, you know, his right hand, why wouldn't he want her perspective on it? In my mind, it kind of shows that she's really not all that important to his plan.
Well, I think she was there when he needed someone to be there. But then remember what he said last episode. I tried trust before. Reading minds is better. Like, he doesn't trust anybody. He's
true.
Gone full, you know, we talked about it last week, and I know you don't want to accept this, but he's it's all David all the time. And we're going to find that out when we talk about him and Sid here in a little bit as well, too. He only really thinks about himself, even when he thinks he's thinking of others.
Well, that's a great segue into here's the first signs maybe of me accepting the cracks in David's persona from good to evil. He says he wants to understand how Switch's power works, and she explains it and tries to show him and even tries to, but he can't break through the barrier. She draws the doorway. She walks right through, but he can't push through. And even if she reaches out her hand and tries to pull him in, it still won't work. And this clearly frustrates him. And, you know, the fact that there's something he's unable to do, you know, that there's a power out there that he can't grab hold of. And so then Switch can see he's mad and asks him straight up if he's mad. And that's when he turns and says, you know, he turns on this sweetness again and says, "Do you believe in me?" And here's the catchphrase: "Do you believe I'm a good person and deserve love just like everyone else?"
Right. This told me things about both of them. One, yes, absolutely. This was when you start, and he showed it a little bit last episode, but David wants, you know, we talked about Farouk telling him he needs to join him at the adults table, that he's a god. David wants to be there, but this is a note I wrote down. David is still an amateur. He's still only accepting the full limits of his power. And so when he does get stopped by something, he doesn't understand that he's, you know, like, yeah, like you said, he absolutely frustrates him. He's visibly pissed off, you know, not necessarily at her, but as soon as he gets hit by the, he can't pass through, he's pissed. And then this also tells me something about Switch. We don't know why she's doing this, because she's not drugged. She's not intimidated, because she stands up to Lenny every second, you know, any chance she can. She's never intimidated by Lenny.
Mm-hmm. But right.
She's definitely searching for some approval from David. I don't know if it's the father figure role she wants from him or what, but yeah, as soon as she started saying, "Wait, are you mad at me? Please don't be mad at me." You know, that just reminded me of this vulnerable little girl.
She does. She seems...
Obviously, he's been trying to attract. First time we really saw a full weakness from her, because she didn't flinch from Farouk.
Right. Yeah, she does seem empathetic to him,
mm-hmm.
to his plight. She does. She immediately does the "don't, you know, are you mad at me?" And but that's, you know, that's his manifesto. We hear it again, even in throughout the show, that, you know, he's a good person and deserves love. We've heard that before. And when he asks her if she believes that, she immediately says, "Of course."
Mm-hmm.
And he tells her, you know, "We can fix this world and just start over. You have the powers. We just need to turn the volume up." She asks how, and then he says, "I know a guy." Yeah. Now, of course, I knew immediately, I know you did too, that he's thinking of Carrie.
I love it. We're going to get into Carrie in a minute, but I crushed on him a couple episodes ago. I'm going to gush completely over him in a few minutes when we get to Bill Irwin, because he stole this entire episode.
He was incredible. So incredible. We'll get to him.
So let's move on.
Okay. So next scene, we see Squirrel being interrogated by Clark in the plane's cockpit.
Loved it.
Squirrel is, you know, Clark is just asking, "Where's the house?" And Squirrel starts singing the "Jump, Jump" song.
Yeah.
Or reciting the words, not really singing.
Do you think he was thinking, my got from the first time I watched it, I just thought it was kind of a funny thing. And then when I watched it again, I was thinking, he looks around when he's saying, like, "Squirrel's a good boy." And Clark even says, "Who are you talking to?" So do you think he starts singing that because he assumes David's reading his mind or is able to read his mind up there? And so he already knows, because think about it, he gets interrogated by Lenny immediately later on.
Right.
But do you think he already knows, like, if I say anything or even think anything, they're going to know this? So it's almost like his way of drowning out his brain type of thing, or maybe he's even used to his mind being read. Like, that's how I kind of – because it doesn't make any sense why he starts, you know, singing – 1992 terrible hip hop songs from you know, Crisscross. So I had to assume that was his way of clearing his mind type of thing. I loved it. I love Clark being just going back in complete asshole mode, like when we first met Clark interrogating David. I love when Clark puts his badass face on, and it was hilarious. But yeah, I kind of got that idea that Squirrel was clearing his mind, or at least trying to block his mind from whether he even thought either Clark was reading his mind or he was worried that David was going to read his mind, but one or the other.
Well, and it's clear that Squirrel is also suffering from massive, massive withdrawal of the David Essence drug.
Yes.
Essence de David. I think maybe one of the side effects of that drug, you know, you're euphoric when you're on it and you're all about peace and love and in harmony with David. But maybe when you're withdrawing from his essence, you are super paranoid about the wrath of David, or, you know, or maybe it invokes this weird sense of loyalty that you can't break free from.
Right.
And much like any other drug withdrawal, you know, this is what you go through, just this crazy paranoia. Because he does. He's acting crazy, and that Jump Jump song is just nuts.
Yep.
But hilarious. And Clark does eject him and then starts yelling for Carrie to release the parachute. And at which point I said, well, of course they have a tracker on him.
Right.
And naturally they do. So there is that funny line about how the parachute's released just a little bit too late, and it's okay. He still made it. He's just limping just a little bit.
Yeah, I did. I took note that Carrie seemed to like be zoning out because he was watching them to begin with on that little radar thing, but it definitely seemed like he wasn't paying attention at all when he got dropped out of the airplane. Because yeah, Clark's running down the plane yelling parachute. I don't know if that meant something or not, but he definitely seemed to be not paying attention during that. Which I don't know, it might be nothing, but I noticed it.
Yeah, well, maybe Carrie's working on, you know, other things. He doesn't have time to worry about the parachute button.
That's true.
But of course they have a tracker on him, and as Squirrel is picked up by Lenny and company in the van, Division 3 is watching from their computer on the ship, and Carrie, you know, as they're watching it all unfold, Ninja Carrie is talking about how she is very excited to be able to fight Lenny.
Yep. Yeah, she wants Lenny for sure, which they're definitely setting up, I think, the Carrie versus Lenny fight, which will be awesome.
Right. We don't get it this episode, unfortunately. I too was looking forward to that.
Yeah, we'll have to make sure when that happens, we let Tim and Jeff know, because I know they'll want to watch the Carrie on Lenny mud wrestling fight.
Speaking of, we get another scantily clad outfit from Lenny. Lenny material watch.
Oh, there you go. It's you don't have much to watch.
Yeah. She's basically wearing a shirt and some shoes. So, but she looks great. She's got legs for days. She can definitely pull it off.
Absolutely.
All right. But before we go back to Lenny and Squirrel in the van, we get this just... All right. you know,
issues, you're going to get emotional, aren't you?
I'm going to say I actually like Sid with bangs, so we can talk about the hair. But you know what? I've decided officially I don't like Sid. I am so we get another shot of her. She's still standing over the crater. She looks at those stupid tattoos on her wrists, and they are dumb as shit. And then David starts speaking to her through astral. There's an astral projection of him, but he's speaking in her mind. And, you know, first he kind of cracks a joke because she says something about his commune of teenage girls with daddy issues. And he cracks the wrong joke for sure by saying, oh, what are you jealous? And he realizes it immediately. And this is again where we could see David, perhaps I'm agreeing here that he is just solely trying to manipulate her, because once he sees that he has to be just nothing but just sweet David to her, but
yeah, I mean, I still
what he says she can't be reasoned with,
yeah,
right?
It's a combination still. I still just don't think he fully gets it, you know, like he still has not accepted the fact that he's just straight up mentally ill. And he didn't get that, and they tried to tell him that at the end of last season, you know, because that was kind of the argument of season one. Is he crazy, or did he have a parasite in his head? And then season two basically was saying it was both. He had Farooq, and he's crazy, you know, and I say the term crazy, obviously not to demean anything, but he has a mental illness. He still doesn't see himself as mentally ill, even though he knows he talks to himself. He's got all these, you know, different personalities. He just doesn't understand that she's pissed at him. I got this from this whole conversation. We don't have to go, you know, I'm sure if you have a couple of lines you want to specifically bring out, you know, there are some good ones. But this whole conversation, you know, it is this argument. Both of them, I think, are in the wrong in this argument. Sid has this concept of, or well, let's start with David first. David did. So David did something terrible to her, but he never realized that he did. Once he finally knew, like, you know, once she told him what you actually did to me, and she says it again tonight. You drugged me and took advantage of me or had sex with me. He still thinks that he did that in a good intention. So it's right. Like, you know, it's this concept of almost like a date rape type thing where it's like he doesn't realize that he did something or he didn't. He knows that he didn't intend to hurt her in his mind.
Right.
But he can't grasp the fact that he actually did. But to his mind, it's like, oh, well, all I have to do is tell you I'm sorry. And in her mind, it's kind of the opposite of you hurt me. And now, even though I know you didn't necessarily mean to do it, like there's nothing he can say at this point. So they're both, you know, that he can say to for her to forgive him. So they're both kind of at a crossroads. They won't see eye to eye in any, and there's no compromise between them.
That's the frustrating part, is that there's no forgiveness on her part. And I do feel like there is genuine remorse on his part. She just sees it as a trick, though. It's just so frustrating. And we actually, the conversation at the end of the episode between David and Carrie, male Carrie, you know, is very telling of this moment as well. But yeah, my notes on this, of course, we tweeted about this. I've followed along with your tweet when we got the pigtail flashback. I think I called it a ponytail flashback,
yeah, ponytail. In my tweet,
but it's pigtails. And seeing that juxtaposition of Sid from season one, that's when I decided I actually do like her bangs. So I'm ready to go out on Banggate, and we can duke that out. But other than that, I pretty much hate everything else Sid says, and I'm not condoning date rape or anything that David did to her, but I want her to just loosen a little bit and try to find some forgiveness. But, you know, he says it's called love. And she says that, have you ever heard that saying that men are afraid women will laugh at them and women are afraid men will kill them? I've heard that saying before.
Yeah, I believe that's Margaret Atwood, isn't it? The one who wrote the Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, yeah, possibly. Yeah,
I think she's the one who's accredited to that quote, which makes sense.
And, you know, that's just a weird line in there because, you know, he even says, well, how could you kill me twice and not even be affected by it? Of course, she has no memory of having done that, but that's when he says his mantra again, I'm a good person, I deserve love. And she says, it doesn't matter how much you undo with the time travel, it's not going to change who you are. And then from this, as this conversation is ending, where she's just refusing to relent, we see from his meditation pose, he's becoming angry, and this red smoke is emitting from him, which the red smoke suddenly fills all the pipes and the chambers in the commune, the hippie commune. And you can hear them all exclaiming as the blue turns to red, and they're all saying, it's red, it's red. Yeah. And then they start to inhale it, and they move from tranquil and peaceful movements into very frenzied and chaotic movements. Yeah.
Very cool scene visually showing the blue. I mean, the blue almost turns purple as it turns to red and it goes through the house. I like that visualization of his anger now taking over the commune. I do think this shows that he's, again, I don't know if he's necessarily accepting what she's saying, but it shows that he's realizing, you know, that she's just, she's not going to forgive him. And he's still, again, I can't tell if he's mad because she's not going to forgive him, or if he's just mad because he still doesn't think he necessarily did anything wrong. I think Noah Hawley story through this, I know a lot of people last season thought this was a almost too extreme thing that he did with when he kind of mind tricked her and then they slept together, and they made that kind of the crux of his turn. But I think he made this, if you want to call it a sexual assault or whatever, they did it in such a way where it really is a very, you know, just like it is in real life, it's so nuanced and tricky because, one, we know that physically he actually didn't touch her, right? Because they can't touch her. But right. It is still a, you know, if you want to call it a mind rape or whatever, you know, it is that. And so it's this idea that he doesn't feel like he actually raped her, but she's telling, and I love the fact that they don't actually never say the word rape in the show. I like that she didn't say that again. She keeps saying, you drugged me and had sex with me.
Right.
And I think that is a very clear, or it's very purposeful for why they say it like that, because they want it to be a very gray conversation piece for the show. Because if they were just saying rape, 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 I think it would be easier for David to realize, oh, I did do something terrible. And by the way, it's even said to him, he still doesn't see it as, well, I didn't actually drug you. And now we actually see his mind is a drug in this episode, in this season.
Right.
Right? But in the past, we didn't see that. But now we actually see his mind is a drug, literally. His mind is a drug. And so I love the way they do that. I love that he is just, he can't handle the truth she's laying on him, and the fact that she won't give in to him at all. Even if she is being overly unforgiving, she has the right to be, I think. As much as I don't care for Sid either, I think she definitely has a right to feel the way she does. And I think he just can't handle it.
It's almost like her rejection of him is what is turning him to the dark side.
Well, because she's the first real love that he's felt, right? Like, right. I mean, that was the whole purpose of season one and two, I guess. You know, he always saw her as, I deserve love, and finally I have love. And now what I thought was love rejected me. Absolutely rejected me. And so he doesn't you said this last week about Farouk specifically referring to him as my child, but just in the sense of a child. He mm-hmm. definitely has this immaturity to him still, you know, like there is this mental immaturity or emotional immaturity,
right?
To understand. And so he has the kind of maturity of a 12-year-old being broken up with for the first time, or being rejected by his crush, you know, being in love with his English teacher. And then she tries to tell him, like, no, you know, oh, you're such a sweet boy, David, but I'm married and I can't be with you. And he doesn't understand that because I thought we were in love, because that's how a 12-year-old looks at the world. It is this immaturity completely on his part.
And I guess that's just what's breaking my heart. I want him to have love, and he deserves it. All right, well, then we move to the beautiful overview shot, real panned out overview shot of Lenny's van driving through several long roads. So that was really just beautiful imagery.
Cool shot.
They eventually stop in an old barn and walk into a clearing. My other favorite scene, other than the Carrie stuff at the end, is this Alice in Wonderland imagery with Lenny as the Mad Hatter, and they're all set up to have a tea party. And Squirrel arrives and is seated at one end of the table. And Lenny starts demanding answers and becomes very scary, has scary voice, crawls across the table at him. Asks him if they, you know, what he told them, asks him if they warmed his nuts.
Yep. Temperature of your nuts.
Yes. And listen, asshat, I want to know the temperature of your nuts. He is still just wanting to know, is David here? Wanting, you know, she's dangling the vial of his essence over him. It's blue in the beginning, but then in the end, she gives him the red stuff. and tells him, you know, this is like the fine wine. He's no longer the amateur. That blue stuff was for newbies. You know, he's ready for the red stuff now.
Little birdies only get treats after they sing.
Is he here?
That's Starling for...
Who's asking?
Where you been, little bird? The house went to Oz, and you aren't in it.
I was in the airplane.
In the sky.
Oh, yeah? You fly first class? They warm your nuts?
What?
Focus, asshat. I'm asking about the temperature of your nuts.
Can I just have the drugs now? I thought the blue stuff.
You like wine, little bird? Huh? Nice Chianti? Beaujolais? Tuscany? Loire Valley? Ever seen blue wine? No. This is the good stuff. Oh. That blue water is just for beginners. And you're not a beginner, are you?
And then they have him inhale it through that creepy baby doll pipe. And as all this is going down, Division 3 is closing in. So what do you else you want to say about this scene? It's just so
I don't have too much extra to say because I think it was fairly, it was, you know, although it looked trippy as hell, it was just an interrogation scene. Again, and I'll give another shout out to Aubrey Plaza. Have you seen the new It?
You're talking about Child's Play?
No, It, like with the clown.
Oh, yeah. Is she in part two?
No, but I'm just, I think it's Bill Skarsgård who's plays the clown.
Right.
Like the thing he's able to do with his eyes, you know?
Yes.
And he does that like on his own.
Yes.
I haven't noticed this before, and I don't know if it's actually her or not, but this scene, Aubrey Plaza does some things with her eyes where they like start off slightly crossed and like focus on him. That are just so subtle and like creepy and awesome. Again, yeah. If it's actually her doing it, she's the best. I've said that from the beginning. She deserves so much credit for the show because she plays something different almost every week. Or if it's just the way they did it with computers, it still looks great. But I thought the whole scene visually was fantastic. I think I'm now in love with the like little redhead Manson girl, like who kind of seemed to be the lead. Like a groupie Manson cult girl, because I don't know, something about her just was very charming.
The freckles.
She was just terrifyingly charming. I liked her. I like Squirrel just being completely paranoid still. I like the scene in general. I thought it was pretty straightforward. I've had this thought from the very beginning. These vape machines they're using, like this is what I use for my kids, you know, like when they're having coughs. We have like a fog machine like that.
Sure.
Gotta be the most inefficient use of drugs ever, right? Like how much smoke is being just left out on the table while they're using these things? Seems like a vape pen or something like that would be a lot more efficient. But hey, we don't know what time frame this is. Maybe it's 1976. This is all they have. I don't know. But it just seems so inefficient. But I do like the visual.
It's definitely something in the show aesthetic.
Yes.
Because we've seen them smoke out of so many different.
Yeah, I think the very first time we saw it was like the frog vaporizer,
right,
from the very beginning.
And
of course,
Melanie
had her
elephant.
Yeah.
So I appreciate the consistency there.
Yeah,
as the items just continue to get creepier and creepier because we, you know, we see the penguin one later on too. So yeah.
I do like, so as we're transitioning to Division 3, I like that, as when we see them, Carrie's like, they're doing the drugs, and Clark's just,
yeah,
they're doing drugs. Who can,
right.
You know, like, he's so nonchalant. I love, is it Hamish, I can't think of his last name.
Linklater
or something like that. He plays the straight man so well in this, with so many crazy characters. He's the absolute just straightforward deadpan person. I appreciate him a lot. And yeah, so this starts becoming a great scene.
And again, our only Vermilion, there in the van.
Target is not in first vicinity or something like that.
Yeah.
I tried to remember. I saw it earlier. I was like, oh, she's going to want me to say it again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, we're on Vermilion Watch. They talk. Finally, you know, Ninja Carrie is just ready to move in and strike. You're right. Man Carrie, Glasses McLabcoat Carrie is, they're wanting to wait for David to get there. You know, they don't realize this is the old, like they say in Barry, this is the old crisscross that's about to go down here. But I've just done a rewatch of Barry season 2.
Hey, so it's fresh. Good use of crisscross for considering squirrel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, considering jump, right?
Yep.
But anyway, I love the slow motion, just great direction there. You know, you could just watch Ninja Carrie run through a field all day long.
Absolutely.
And it would be entertaining. Yeah. She's just beautiful and graceful. And then seeing it in that slow motion, it was great. It ends with this face-off with the hippies who are, you know, there's your redhead hippie. They're all holding knives, clearly ready for a fight. You know, they've been breathing the David's red essence, so they're primed and ready. And I love it, you know, Carrie just calling to drop the net.
Yeah.
And we got the big hook last episode. We got the big net this episode, so no need to fight these innocent folks. Let's just drop a net on them. But then Squirrel runs in, clearly just, you know, zonked out of his mind and is just doing a little crazy dance and distracting them, which is all Lenny needs to shut Glasses McLabcoat carry in the back of the van, a back of their own van, and take off with him.
Yeah,
so Carrie now captured.
I love Ninja Carrie when they do drop the net, and then they're all like squirming on the table, and she just gives the like, you know, she shows up so badass, and then they just, all we needed was a net, not even a challenge.
Right.
Like, so she's, because they kind of almost set it up like she's going to like kick ass again, and then it's just, just drop the net.
Well, this is when we thought, as audience, you know, this is before we got the old crisscross, was that she was running in to fight Lenny.
Right.
And brilliant way to divert our expectations there.
Yeah.
It was really
absolute misdirection.
Yes. So we cut to this beautiful black and white scene with Farouk playing the Christmas time song on the piano. I say it's a beautiful scene. It's just so well filmed. I don't understand why he's in a room with drag queens, but
yes, right. So not all of them, I think, but definitely the first two were like big bodybuilder drag queens. Like,
yeah, I'm not saying that there's a problem there, but I don't think we
ever noticed that the first time. No, in fact, I think he maybe, if anything, it's just he's so, you know, it's that concept of ancient decadence, you know, like when you are so decadent, it's like Caligula, you know, you'll have anything whenever you want. I love this scene because, one, it was so Legion, just such a Legion scene, just out of nowhere, completely had nothing to do with anything. He's playing, and it does do that callback with the Charlie Brown Christmas. Sid interrupts him. And to me, all this was him. He was relaxing because, you know, he's having a drink in his office and he almost kind of smiles when he gets interrupted. I think this was literally just him, his way of relaxing, you know, where we relax, we read a book or we, you know, I sit on my hammock and watch the sky and think about things. I don't have the ability to go actually visualize and put myself in those daydreams. This is literally him daydreaming, but in a way where only, you know, one of the most powerful psychics can daydream. That's what I got from it.
Yes. And what I also got from this scene still is that Farouk is still the big bad here. And this is 100% him manipulating Sid. And she is just, maybe the reason he is so tranquil and at peace is because he knows he's winning. And
yes.
And this was just the final, you know, nail in the controlling Sid coffin, because she walks in and says, you know, David still thinks he's the victim. You know, she wants to whine and bitch about David, and Farouk just is very calm and very plainly says, you know, she has to be the one to reach him. An army cannot sneak up on him, but a lover can.
Right.
And she thinks he's indicating that she needs to seduce him in order to kill him. And she immediately says, oh, gross.
Yeah.
And he says his final lines, which is just the ultimate manipulation. You know, she's so obsessed with the fact that she doesn't want David to control her, that she doesn't see that freaking Farouk is controlling her. He says, the intimacy that they need is emotional, not physical. And then he says, I will teach you to lie so well that David will thank you while you stab him in the back.
Right. And he's almost
lying.
And he's almost describing what he's doing to her right
there. Yeah.
He's breaking her down. She didn't, like you said, she didn't even realize it. I wrote down I wrote down that Farouk is the only person in Division 3 that seems not stressed in any way. And he even makes that comment about when she says, well, we could get ahead of David. And he goes, well, what would be the fun in that? He is literally having fun. We talked last week about this concept. You know, I said maybe it's this paternal instinct he has where he wants, like, his son to rule with him. But now I almost look at it like Heath Ledger's Joker from The Dark Knight, when at the end when he gets captured, and it's this idea of, no, we're meant to be constantly sparring with each other, you know, like it's the immovable object and the unmovable force or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think Farouk just wants David to get so powerful, and he knows that they'll never be more than equals, but he wants someone, if they're not going to rule together, he almost wants this lifelong, you know, it's the Magneto Xavier relationship he wants. He wants this rivalry for time. Maybe we'll find out he had that with Xavier, and Xavier finally beat him, and you know, maybe we'll find that out in the next couple episodes. But he wants David to reach his potential, whether that means he'll rule with them, whether that means they'll constantly be battling, but it's like this game between them type of thing. He doesn't care about Division 3, obviously. He doesn't care about any of them. He cares about, but he does, whether it's, I don't know what the reason behind it is, he does have a care for David, whether it's in the long term. He at least wants David to get to his full power. Like, he has no, I don't think he has any interest in killing David unless he knows it's David at his most powerful. He wants David to reach his potential.
It just seems like, it's almost like he wants Sid to reach her full potential, though. But it seems like he's also a little bit moved on from reaching David, because I don't know. I took that last line as he wants Sid to kill David. Or do you think that this final act of Sid possibly learning to lie so well that she could get that close to him would be the final unleashing of David's full power to stop him?
I think it all comes down to David. I think it all comes down to David. David's his key. That's why he's been attached to David. That's why he keeps calling him my son, my boy. David's his person. Sid's a pawn. He started using future Sid, you know, to get to David last time. This is just him going after David. I think what he knows here's, well, you know, and I think maybe what it is he knows still that if Sid were to forgive David and love him, that David would always go back to Sid. Love is the thing that will eventually save David.
Right.
If he can finally get rid of the love completely, then David has nothing. So he has to destroy Sid before David. And he even, you know, now I even think about it, he makes that line. He's talking about Switch, obviously, but he even says we have to get rid of her before we get rid of him.
Yeah.
Now, what if he was also talking about Sid? You know, we got to get rid of her before I can actually take care of David.
It'd be great, as Sid is dying, in her dying moments, she realizes that it was Farouk all along, and she looks down at her tattoos and they change from me first to Farouk first. And she realizes she's been duped this whole time as she lays dying. I hope happens.
I would agree. It would be great to see Sid dying.
All right. Final scenes. Here we move into final scenes with Bill Irwin, the brilliant, just physical acting of Bill Irwin. He's just wonderful. So Carrie, Bill Irwin plays male Carrie. He awakes. He's in the clock room that we saw Switch in. A woman walks. This is a very comical scene. It was a little bit far-fetched, but hey, only Carrie could pull this off, right? So a woman comes in to serve him some soup, and as she moves around, he is creeping up right behind her so she can't see him. And he eventually escapes the room and is walking through the house and sees all the crazy sights. He sees the pig, everything insane. He's clearly affected by what he sees. You know, I wouldn't say disgusted by it, but it's definitely affecting him.
Can we pause before we get to him and David?
Oh, sure.
So this is where I told you I wanted to gush on Bill Irwin.
Yes.
So I don't think I realized it until a couple weeks ago. So I have two daughters. The oldest one is 10 years old. And, you know, like most parents do with their kids, one of the first things we watched when they were a lot younger was Sesame Street, particularly, which is the bane of most parents, but kids love it. Elmo, his shows. Bill Irwin, since 2001, I believe he took over for the actor from, if you've ever seen The Green Mile.
Oh, yeah.
The guy with the mouse.
Oh, yes.
And I can't think of his name, but he died of AIDS in the early 2000s. But he was also a pantomime and a clown. He was on Elmo for years, and then Bill Irwin took over for him for a character called Mr. Noodle. And he was a mime. So he was just a mime on the show, and he'd have little segments each show. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned during our preview show that Bill Irwin not only is a big Broadway actor, but he did attend Ringling Brothers Clown Circus when he was younger. He was a vaudevillian, you know, disciple, even though that's been gone for years. They always try to give him little bits where he can show his physical prowess. There's that dance scene he does when David first goes like into the future in the tank last season. And this scene is so just letting him just completely just do his entire physical act here. I love that they show him to try to kind of bring in his like, I'm a physics, quantum physics person. He's snapping and hearing the echoes reverberating across the room. So he knows how he can use the echoes to his advantage. The way he is following the girl and peeking around her as she turns one way or the other. And I love her chemistry off of him, the way she turns. When he gets his coat, he throws the spoon over her and grabs his coat. And then even as he's going through the hallway, when he looks at that pig, that smoking pig, the look he gives is, I watched this three times in the past 2 days. I laughed out loud every time he looks at that pig because it's such a look of, like you said, it's not disgust. It's not even shock. It's just like, what the fuck? Like, okay, whatever. Like, even he's like one of our like audience members, like, it's a lesion, whatever. Okay. And I love the way his facial reactions, everything about his body. He is so just perfect with everything he does. This was such a brilliant, like 6 minutes of television. They gave him his face to shine. I love that they let the actors have these little pieces here and there. We don't talk about this very much, but this is such a Legion, I think, and I'm going to digress here for just a minute. Give me 90 seconds on this.
Sure.
I think Legion is one of the most appropriately diverse casts in television, in the sense of almost every character is a different ethnicity or race or gender, or, you know, there's all of them have different backgrounds, and it's never preached to you about it. It's
right.
Never, like, this person is, you know, Girl Carrie, she's an American Indian, and Switch, she's Chinese, you know, and David, he's actually an English actor, and Farouk, he's, you know, and it's just this diverse cast that does their thing as characters. I love it. I love the way this show just lets these actors, regardless of who they are, these actors and actresses show their talents as actors and actresses. It's so breathtaking in this political correct world where everything has to be the first person who did this or the first show that shows these people doing that. They don't care about any of that. They just have a good group of actors. It's all different races and origins and backgrounds, and they just act their asses off. It's awesome. It's so good.
And the show is almost designed to showcase each one of them at their peak performance.
Absolutely. It gets everyone in their moment to shine.
So in such harmony that you can't tell, is the show being written for these actors who have already completely personified these characters?
Right.
Yeah, okay, so that was brilliant. I couldn't have said it better, Dean. Thank you. I 100% agree. Let's get into this final scene as we continue to gush about Carrie. He finally works his way into, you know, David's central room where we see where his front porch space is and where he has that big hole in the room that he can swoop in and out of. I kind of think of that as his like ground central, you know, his central command space.
Absolutely. That's definitely his inner circle.
And this is, you know, he comes in and is confronting Carrie. Carrie's visibly afraid, but, you know, David's doing everything he can to calm him. And I love this line. David says, "You said something to me at the trial." And of course, Carrie's saying, "I think we called it an intervention." And then, you know, David's like, no, you tried to gas me. And so Carrie says, "Okay, well, then what did we say at the trial?" Or what did I say at the trial? And David says, "Your mind can't reconcile the person we see with the person you think you are." That's a really good line. I'm glad that was a recall from the last season finale, because that is the line they said, and it was a great line. That's exactly the problem here. 100% the problem.
It even calls back to Sid and Farouk's conversation a few minutes earlier, where Sid comes in saying, "We still think he's the victim," and Farouk says, "Well, his perception is his reality. It's a false reality." So even he's basically saying the same thing, but Carrie's actually telling David.
But David recognizes the problem at its core here, that they believe that his mind can't reconcile the person that they think he is.
Right.
And they, you know, we have to believe they could be wrong. Still, this is where I hearken back to David's a good person and deserves love. Because he can see what the problem is fundamentally.
But he doesn't accept it.
Does he have to accept it?
He doesn't, but he doesn't even seem to. No, you're
actually
right.
Put back in a mental institution. You know,
you're right.
All I'm doing here is creating a world for peace and tranquility.
Yeah. And again, this is why the show is awesome, because it even the main problem between David and the rest is so gray. Like you can argue both sides. You're absolutely right. No, he doesn't have to accept it, but at the same time, you can easily see why he should at least entertain the thought, right? Like you can see why both of them could be right and why both of them could be wrong. The show does a great job of painting such a vague portrait of the split between good and bad.
His willingness to have a conversation about it, I think, demonstrates that he can see it from their perspective, sort of.
Yeah, I don't know. It's because he starts the conversation, but he doesn't like when it doesn't go his way.
No.
Now he reacted with Sid, obviously. And, of course, he does eventually have Lenny throw a giant penguin drug mask over Carrie. So it's not like he accepts what he says in any way.
Yes. He begins to explain to Carrie that he has a time traveler and he needs Carrie to develop a tank or a tool to magnify her powers. You know, he says, "Help her, help me. Open your mind and your heart. You want to do this." And Carrie says, "I do." And David says, "You will." And that's when Lenny jumps on him with the penguin gas mask. So then we move into another just beautiful scene of Carrie clearly under the influence of the penguin red gas. Or maybe it's not the red gas, but the David essence gas. He's in a room sitting at a vanity, brushing his hair. He sees his counterpart, female Carrie, in the mirror. This is great acting by both of them. It's incredible. Incredible use of the practical effects, like they have been all this episode, as you always mention. I got to believe that they filmed it in unison and worked out those that choreography it to be in unison. Like, there's just, I can't see how they could have filmed it separately and spliced it.
Right.
It was just beautiful. They echo this, there's this echoey conversation that they're having where they're talking about the periodic table and about their parents. It's very interesting. And then he opens that wardrobe and pulls female Carrie through the mirror, and they start to dance. And as they're dancing, they're fighting over who should lead the dancing. And she's saying, let me lead. And then he spins her out. And when she returns, she's David saying, let me lead.
So what do you think was going on there?
I definitely think he's under the influence of David's essence. And this is really just all happening in his mind. Obviously, any time, and this is what I said immediately when Lenny kidnapped Carrie to begin with. I said, wait, Carrie and Carrie cannot be separated for very long. Right. It has bad effects on both of them. We've seen this already.
I think even Carrie worried for David, both of them. Carrie says that to David. He says, please don't kill me because she needs me.
Like, she needs me. Right. So I think that he's reconciling in his mind, you know, always thinking whenever he's separated from Carrie, always thinking about getting back to Carrie. So of course he's thinking about that. But with that final scene of David coming in saying, let me, that is him officially being now under David's thrall.
Yeah. It took me a while to get this scene. I don't know why, because I think that's where, like you said, it is Carrie's mind. And it's almost like just showing David filling that void of Carrie. Mm. Like you said, because Carrie's not there. So he says, well, I'll lead if you need Carrie. It took me a while. I had to watch that one a few times. In fact, I even rewound it a couple of times to watch it again because it took me a minute to kind of really get what was going on there. But definitely David has put Carrie under his influence.
So then Carrie wakes So then Carrie is in a room with...
Talks with Switch, right?
That's right. He wakes in a room with Switch. She's pouring tea. She asks for his help to magnify the field, and he wants more explanation. He's clearly, you know, his science mind, he's clearly intrigued, especially as she starts to explain that time is a hallway. We get some real good understanding here of how the time travel works, right?
Right.
Time is a hallway. It moves in two directions, forward and back. And she goes on to say, I can draw a door in the air like this and access the time stream. And Carrie is just in awe. And he says, oh, that's fascinating.
Right.
And she says, but I can go, but I need you to expand this field so that I can take him with me. And Carrie is immediately then brought into a lab with all of the tools and technology that he needs. Yeah. Lenny's in there.
We got your shit.
Yeah, she dismisses Switch and says, hey there, Professor, we got your shit. And then he starts to walk around, and his mind is already at work, and he starts to say, I need transponders. And he even she's walking around with a, you know, like a scepter.
Hammer.
And he starts to reach for it. I love the line. It was such a great line where she says, get your own hammer, Grabby.
Right.
And then she leans in again, and says, this was a cool scene. And I wanted to ask you what your thoughts were on this, but she starts to, her paranoia again, seeping through because she wants to know what the hell David's up to. And she's not been brought into the full loop yet. And she says, and he says, I don't know how long it's going to take me. He doesn't know really what she's talking about. And she says, what time is he going to, and what's he going to do? You know, Carrie never really answers when, because he doesn't know either, but she says, what's he going to do? You hear David's voice coming through Carrie, and he says, save the world. Do you think that this whole time, anytime Lenny's interacting with anybody, but especially with Carrie and or with Switch, that David's present that whole time, he's privy to the whole conversation, wouldn't you think?
I'm going to feign an ignorance here because I did not notice or hear that was David's voice as opposed to Carrie's voice saying that. I did take it as her, at first I thought it was her kind of prodding Carrie to make sure he knew what the mission was type of thing. Like almost like, I want to hear you say that you're on David's side. And, but then when I watched it again, and obviously I'd already been bringing up last week that I think Lenny's very jealous and insecure. It did come off as like, she's trying, like, I don't know the plan. So what's the plan? What's the plan? What's the plan? I didn't grab that was David. That is that's a
go back and watch it again. It's to me, it's clearly David's voice.
Yeah.
Coming through, just saying, save the world. Almost like he knows Lenny's in there just, you know, bombarding Carrie.
Either that or David's taken over Carrie. I mean, in the comic, isn't Legion, like, Legion's in the comic, he actually absorbs people, right? Like, absorbs personalities and stuff. So it could even be starting the beginning of that, where he's just, like the Shadow King, he's got a Carrie mask on. You know, he's taking over people now. So it could be something like that. But, yeah, I definitely found Lenny being, again, very insecure, very jealous of the fact that she doesn't know what's going on. I love that hammer. I don't understand why she has this hammer this season, because you remember the first time we see her, she breaks into the room with the hammer asking how the weight was. Wasn't it awful last episode? So we've seen her with this hammer almost the entire time. It's like she almost uses it as Clark has his little dog cane.
Yeah, it's like a cane, right? Yeah.
But surely she's going to smash someone's face with that at some point, right? Like, it's just foreshadowing. Like, surely she's got to bash somebody's brains in at some point. Like, I hope, because why else would you have a big silver hammer like that? She looks like Charlie Manx from the Nosferatu show or book, if you would watch or read either of those.
I'm not watching the show, and I did not read the book, although I hear the books are good.
Yeah, I haven't watched the show, but that's one of my favorite Joe Hill books.
Oh. Yeah. Well, end scene, as we wrap up here, we kind of already talked about it, but we did see the trailer for next week's episode, which looks like some time traveling works, where David chooses maybe to go all the way back to his birth.
Yeah, I haven't seen if there's been a more newly released trailer. I just watched the one after the initial episode, and even that one was very short, and it only even showed... We don't necessarily even know if there is time travel, because it almost just seemed like it may just, like you said, it may just be a straight flashback of his birth or pre-birth even, because it shows Xavier and the wife, David's mom. I think it's Gabrielle. Is that the mom?
I believe.
Yeah, Gabrielle.
And the discussion is between them saying, you know, the Professor X being concerned that David will be like him,
right?
Saying, well, do you want him to be like me? So there's something wrong with her as well.
Yeah, maybe she has the schizophrenia. Maybe she was schizophrenic. Yeah,
maybe.
So it'll be interesting to see. Like I said, we talked about this last week. Legion does a great job of teasing, but giving you very little to actually put together what the hell is going to happen. So that's one of the beauty. One of the beautiful things about this show is you're always left guessing what might happen. All I know is that, like I said, so far they've at least set up what seems to be a very straightforward story for this, or not even straightforward, but kind of a trajectory for this last season. They only have 8 episodes, so I don't know if they can do more than one kind of one-off, but let's hope they kind of get moving here.
Well, we will see next week. Well, Dean, thank you again. And I will put our Twitter handles, of course, in the show notes. But everybody, you can follow us on Twitter again at MikeTV1. You can follow me at Lisa Krause. And Dean, how about you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Rockdale_Tiger, or find me in the Radio Labyrinth Radio Shack Facebook group as Dean Poole. I tend to post a bunch of stuff there.
Excellent. Well, we will talk to you again next week. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Radio Labyrinth, for hosting us into your feed. And look forward to next week, where David deserves love and is a good person.
Team Shadow King.
Ah! Thanks again, everybody.